Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
A factory in Sweden is producing the first batches of steel made without fossil fuel. And just last week, the Swedish carmaker Volvo said it's planning to make new cars with it. Green steel is a big deal because right now the global steel industry is one of the largest emitters of greenhouse gases that cause climate change. Mark Peplow is a science journalist. He wrote about it for Chemical and Engineering News. Mark, good to speak with you.
Good to speak to you too.
And just how much pollution does steelmaking cause around the globe?
A lot. Steelmakers generate over 3 billion tons of carbon dioxide a year. That makes up somewhere between about 7 and 9% of all human-made greenhouse gas emissions. And that's according to the industry's own body, the World Steel Association. Essentially, no other industrial material has a greater climate impact.
Can you explain why? What is it about the process that makes it so carbon intensive?
Well, it's because carbon plays a vital role at pretty much every stage of steel making. You dig up iron ore, you pour in coke, which is like a dense processed form of coal, and limestone, blast of hot air, 2,000 degrees temperature, and what you get out at the end is a form of crude iron called pig iron. And then the second stage of steelmaking, you put that pig iron through another furnace, a basic oxygen furnace, where you adjust the content of carbon and other elements in the mix until you get it just right, and that is steel. You're putting in a lot of carbon, you're removing oxygen, and what you emit is carbon dioxide, warming our planet.
Interesting. So that's the way we've been making steel for ages, right? But there are other alternatives.
Yeah, that's right.
There's technology that's coming out. Swedish steel officials have built a wind-powered steel plant that replaces that blast furnace process you were talking about and uses hydrogen instead of that coal.
Yeah.
How does that technology work?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's based on a commercial technology that's already operating, which there's more than 100 iron-making furnaces that don't use coke. Instead, they use natural gas. Like I said, there's about 100 of those plants already operating commercially. The beauty of it is that rather than using natural gas, you can then shift over to using all hydrogen. You mentioned the project in Sweden called Hybrit. They're doing that process. They're using hydrogen to turn iron ore into iron metal. But they're making that hydrogen using wind-powered electrolyzers. So that's why it's potentially such a clean process, because you're using a renewable power to make what people call green hydrogen. And then that's the ingredient that you use to make green steel.
It seems like a lot of the research to develop this green steel, for lack of a better term, is happening there in Europe. Why is that?
So there's a lot of reasons, really. One, there's been quite a lot of sort of government funding for these sorts of projects. So Hybrit is a kind of, it gets funding from a mixture of industry investment and public funding and some equity funding as well. So that's one thing. The money's there for it. The second thing is, why is the money there for it? Well, it's in part because the European Union emissions trading system. So this is what's called a cap and trade system. And it's a way of setting ever tightening regulatory limits on how much industry can emit CO2. If an industry is able to avoid emitting very much CO2, it may have some spare carbon emission allowances, and it can sell those to other industries who may not be doing so well at reducing their CO2 emissions, so they can buy those. So that means ultimately that you put a price on carbon emissions, and the price of carbon emissions is going up and up and up. It's absolutely soared over the past year, and this is because the EU is further strengthening its commitments to reduce CO2 emissions.
I see. So what you're saying is it has this revenue that it can generate, which means that it would sort of offset the cost of this new technology and bring it down to something manageable.
That's one side of the coin, yeah. And the flip side is that if the industry doesn't adapt and green its technology, it's going to suffer ever greater financial penalties as the regulations get tighter and tighter. Mm-hmm. And I think that the industry, certainly in Europe, has seen the writing on the wall and is getting ready to shift its production over. Hybrid isn't the only example here. It's probably the one that's furthest ahead and that's kind of most serious about doing this in the short term. But many other steelmakers across Europe are investing in similar sorts of technologies. There are actually a range of different ways of achieving this. But they're investing in that so that they are ready to switch over the next 10 to 20 years.
So that's Europe, but there's the rest of the world. China is the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, and it produces half of the world's steel. You've also got the United States, which emits the second highest amount of greenhouse gases. What are the prospects for that kind of technology in those places?
Well, China is a big unknown. Like you said, it produces half the world's steel. The government is planning a 30% cut in steelmaking emissions by 2030, but nobody's seen a roadmap for that. So there's a big question mark about how they're going to do that. At the moment, the world's biggest steelmaking company is, or one of the world's biggest steelmaking companies is China, Baowu Steel. They are putting a lot of money into a technology called carbon capture so that you run your plants, you're in your old plants just like normal, but you try and stop the CO2 coming out of them from entering the atmosphere. Instead, you capture it using various chemical technologies and maybe effectively bury it underground. A lot of people that I've spoken to think that this is kind of like a band-aid, really, that's ultimately not going to be commercially competitive. In the United States, we're also seeing some activity. It tends to be more startup companies that are taking really innovative approaches, actually, in US steelmaking. There's one example which I really like called Boston Metal, which doesn't use hydrogen at all. Instead, it takes renewable electricity and uses that directly to turn iron ore into actually a form of crude steel. And they're at the stage where they have a pilot reactor running that's, you know, it's about 2 meters wide, I think, something like that. But they're planning the next step up. There are similar sort of electrical processes also being developed in parallel in Europe as well.
So these techniques, they're intriguing. But, you know, I think the thing is we've been making steel more or less the same way for so many years, generations, hundreds of years, right? I mean, even more than that. Mm. How tough will it be to completely revamp the system?
Well, I mean, the industry is an absolute leviathan. The infrastructure that it uses, you know, you build a blast furnace, you expect it to last maybe up to 40 years. So companies are simply not just going to switch those off. So existing technologies are going to be with us for quite a while yet. It's been estimated it will take hundreds of billions of dollars of investment to actually change the technology over to something cleaner and more renewable, more sustainable. But all that said, there have been revolutions in steelmaking before. So if the financial circumstances are right, that really can change the way that an industry makes a material like steel in a couple of decades.
Mark Peplow is a science journalist who wrote about green steel for Chemical and Engineering News. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And while we're talking about technology, next month, Amazon's billionaire boss, Jeff Bezos, plans to fly to space in his new reusable rocket. Since he announced the mission, tens of thousands of people here on Earth have signed a petition with a pretty clear message. Don't come back, Jeff. The petition bluntly says billionaires should not exist on Earth or in space, but should they decide the latter, they should stay there. Billionaire Elon Musk's company is making trips into space. Richard Branson is planning a journey of his own. The Bezos rocket is expected to reach space in just 11 minutes. And if you'd like to join him, one seat is up for auction at $28 million. We presume the petition was written tongue-in-cheek, and for the record, we hope everyone makes the journey safely.